Good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is Thursday, February the 15th, 2018, 2:15:18, 15 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into the Now program. Scott Spears here, your host for the next hour. And we have got a great guest this hour, which is going to be a lot of fun. Do want to give you a little note here. Food pantry tonight at the Victory Center Church on East Fairground Street, 5 to 6:30 p.m. All you need is an ID to show you live in the Marion area, and you can go to that food pantry, 5 to 6:30 p.m. tonight, Victory Center Church on East Fairground Street. And we want to thank Judge William Finnegan for joining us in hour number one, leaving the bench after 30 consecutive years on the bench. Judge Finnegan, a lot of fun to have on. Hope you enjoyed that. This hour, we are joined by a gentleman who has had a very diverse career. He is an actor. He is a comedian. He's been on The Gong Show. He's been Bozo the Clown. He is a great voiceover actor. So hearing his voice here in a moment, I'm sure you will recognize in many ways, and appearances on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. You can't beat that. What a great career. Always a pleasure to welcome to these microphones, Joey DeOria. Joey, how are you?
Hi there, Scott. How are you?
Good. Always good to talk with you. How is life out on the West Coast?
It's always interesting. It's always interesting. We've had an awful lot of activity here at our little house today. Yesterday, as you know, was Valentine's Day.
It was.
Yes, and my daughter-in-law sent flowers to my wife as a Valentine's gift. And what happened was the flowers didn't show up, so she called another company and had them send flowers. Meanwhile, my son realized, oh my gosh, it's Valentine's Day, so he sent flowers to his mother. And was told by the company that they couldn't deliver in time, so we called a set. So basically, we now have four bouquets of flowers here on our dining room table. The place looks like a funeral home.
You know, it's funny. I mentioned Johnny Carson there in the intro, and a few years ago I was in interviewing Larry King, and he people don't remember that Johnny Carson had open heart surgery. I think it was the late 90s. And he said, Larry was saying he called Johnny because, of course, Johnny would not do interviews after he left The Tonight Show. But he called him to say he was, you know, how's it going? Hope you're feeling well, so on and so forth. And he said his hospital room looked like a mob hit with all the flowers.
There you go.
So, you know, that's what you get. He still had the wit. You know, being on the Carson Show, I watched that this morning. You can see it on YouTube. What was that like in the 80s?
That was very exciting for any actor or comedian. Appearing on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson was pretty much a sign that your career was going to go somewhere. Back when I was working at the Variety Arts Center in Los Angeles, there were several young actors and actresses who had also done appearances on The Tonight Show. One of them was Victoria Jackson. She did several appearances on The Tonight Show, and as a result, ended up on Saturday Night Live. So I thought that this was really going to be a big break for me. I ended up getting a personal manager who saw me on The Tonight Show, who basically spent the next several months turning work down. Because, in her words, Mr. DeOria doesn't do under fives. And under five means less than five lines on a sitcom or television show. Anyway, she turned down so much work that people stopped even bother calling in for me. And I found myself in the unenviable spot of no longer having a manager or an agent or having the eye of any casting people. I was very lucky at that time that the Bozo Show came along when it did. It was a lifesaver.
You know, that's an interesting story because when you were on Carson, early 1980s, there are still practically three channels left. Most people have not come into the cable age yet.
That's true.
The next day, when you walked down the street, did everybody know you?
No, not really. the circles that I really traveled in were basically just other actors. So it's not like I got recognized at the supermarket.
Right. Well, how did you come up with what you did on The Tonight Show? How did that process happen?
Well, that's a strange story. Before I got married, I was living in Hollywood, and I was taking an improv comedy workshop class. And we were working on bits, and all of a sudden, one of the class members came in late, and he basically announced he had just gotten back from an audition for Chuck Barris's Gong Show. And he announced that they have gone through so many amateurs that they've run out of amateurs on that show, and that they're now willing to hire union actors and would pay union minimum just for any act. So he said, so just come up with an act, anything you can think of, and they'll put you on the show, and they'll boo you off the stage, and then you go home and you collect, I think back then it was $150, which was after minimum in those days. And that was also my rent. And I thought to myself, if I could come up with one stupid act a month, my rent would be taken care of. So I did three or four acts on the Gong Show. And Dr. Flamo was the last one. I was literally, you know, going through my apartment just trying to find props. And since it had been like the late 70s, early 80s, I had a lot of candles, and so I kind of filed a couple of them down so that they were in a progressive from large to small order, and did an act based on a Swiss bell ringer. But instead of ringing different size bells, I would hold my hand over different size flames and scream in a different key. And much to my surprise, I won. As a matter of fact, the first time I did the show, I just stood there awed, and I went, "You like that?" And Chuck Barris elbowed me in the ribs and whispered, "Shut up, kid, you're a hit."
And that ended up being what you did on The Tonight Show.
Yes. Well, and that's a long process, too, because Barris had me back several times. I ended up on his primetime show, which was called The Rah Rah Show. And years, you know, a few years later after that, actually, no, it wasn't even a year, I had to grab, as most actors do, a waiter's job. And I took a waiter's job working at a private club called the Variety Arts Center. And I was working the lunch shift that day. And that day, Milt Larson, the man who created the Magic Castle, Milt was also a comedy writer and had just taken a job as head writer for the Jim Nabors afternoon talk show. And so he had brought Jim Nabors and all of the executives from the Neighbor show to the club to have lunch, because he was showing the club off. And I was their waiter. And as I'm delivering drinks to the table, Jim Nabors turns to Milt and says, "Now, what's this comedy act that you're trying to book on the show?" And Milt said, "Oh, I have a call into Chuck Barris's office." He says, "I saw this act. It's very funny. It's called El Flamo." And I just stopped. And I looked at Milt and I said, "Excuse me, are you talking about Dr. Flamo?" And Milt said, "Well, I don't know." And I said, "The guy that plays the candles?" And Milt jumped up and said, "Yes, yes, that's the act. Do you know him?" And I said, "Sir, I am him."
Wow.
And the table just roared. And Milt, of course, had to cap it off with the line, "You know, only in Hollywood can the actor you're looking for be your waiter."
And how did that get to The Tonight Show?
Well, I ended up working for Milt. I became the manager of the Tin Pan Alley Room and several other parts of the show. And we did many shows there. And one night, Milt comes up to me and says, "Tomorrow night, Jim McCulley, who is Johnny Carson's casting director, is going to be here to look at a couple of magicians. I have two magicians that I'm going to put on stage, but one of them does a very messy act. And I'd like you to come out and do your Dr. Flamo act in front of the curtain while we clean up the stage and get ready for the second magician." And I said, sure, I'll be glad to. So I did it, And there in the front row was Jim McCulley, and he had two guests with him, Tim Conway and Harvey Korman.
Mm.
And I did the act, and Tim Conway laughed so hard he literally slid under the table. And I did the act, I bowed, I got off the stage, the curtain opened, and McCulley saw the second magician. As I was putting my props away, Milt Larson came up to me and said, "Quick, come up to the W.C. Fields bar. Jim McCulley wants to book you on The Tonight Show." And that was how I got booked on The Tonight Show.
Is it frightening to go on The Tonight Show at that time?
Frightening? It was, well, it was exciting. Like I said, it was one of those things that, you know, was a career maker. You know, appearing on The Tonight Show was literally every comedian's dream, because once you were on The Tonight Show, you now had the eye of pretty much every casting director in town. And back in those days, as is pretty much the case today, casting directors out here don't care what your training is as an actor. They go to the comedy clubs and see comedians. So basically, a lot of actors were doing stand-up comedy only because it was the only way you could get a casting director to see them.
You go out, you do the appearance. We heard what happened afterward. Did you ever meet Johnny in this process at all?
Well, I had just finished rehearsing, and they were putting the props away, and Johnny Carson had just come in. He was wearing a pair of jeans, and I had a flannel shirt on. He just kind of ambled in, and he looked at me, and he shook my hand and said, "Hello, I'm John Carson. Jim tells me you're a very funny young man. I'm looking forward to seeing your act." And which is why on the video on YouTube, when they cut back to Carson, he laughs and says, "I'm so glad I didn't see the rehearsal."
Yeah, it's a funny video. Hopefully people check that out. I want to go back to the Gong Show here for a moment. Chuck Barris died in the last year. So much was made of this book. Did you buy the book, or was that just a joke about him being a hitman?
Yes, I know. I have to say I did not buy the book. Didn't they do a movie? Because I think there was a movie.
Yeah, there was. Yeah.
Yeah, I missed that too.
Do you think Chuck Barris was a hitman?
No. But I mean, you know, if you're looking for somebody who is not what they seem, then yeah, that would be a great choice. He just came across as a your typical kind of swarmy Hollywood producer.
That's a good adjective.
Yeah.
You know, how did you get to Hollywood?
Wow. Well, I started in New York and got hired to work at a dinner theater in Miamisburg, Ohio, called the theater is the Towpath Dinner Theater, which I believe now is still in Miamisburg, but now it's called the Baum Opera House. And I worked there for an entire year doing character parts and working with the management. But as was the case in the early 70s, dinner theaters opened and closed very quickly. And this one had the sheriff padlocking the door, so I was on my way out of town. I then went to Denver, Colorado, where I had been promised work at another dinner theater. So I had all my belongings in my car and in a little U-Haul van. And as I pulled into the parking lot, there was the sheriff in Denver padlocking that door. So I worked for a year at the Denver dry goods store during the day and at night as a waiter at an Italian restaurant called Mario's, where they sing while you dine. And I was a waiter while opera singers would sing various arias from which is where I met my wife Virginia. By the way, she was a singer at Mario's. And later on, just went from Colorado to Los Angeles. I reconnected with Virginia in Palm Springs. where she was working for Mario in his other restaurant in downtown Palm Springs. And it's very interesting because back in those days, my wife lived in Palm Springs and I lived in Beverly Hills. We had no money, but we had terrific addresses.
What was it about acting that drew you?
It's funny. I think all kids like to pretend. And I'm probably one of the first generations of television babies. And I pretty much grew up watching television and seeing these shows. And I think the first time I saw at the end of a show where it said, Made in Hollywood, USA, I remember thinking to myself, that's where I need to go.
You are on the Gong Show. You are on the Tonight Show. You get, that's national television, back when there were three channels, basically. You are, you get this agent. The agent, things don't exactly pan out there. How does this Hollywood career end up in Chicago on the Bozo Show?
Well, like I said, things did not pan out with this manager, and I was really depressed. And as a matter of fact, the last thing this woman said to me was, you know, they're holding auditions for the Bozo Show in Chicago. I can get you in on that. And she said, you don't even have to pay me a commission. Just, you know, I'll just set that up. And I was very angry because of all the work she turned down for me. And I said, no, thank you. Mm. You know?
Yeah.
And I walked out of her office. Anyway, a few weeks go by, and it was very funny because I had gone to an audition for a play, and on the way to the audition, I had to drive by KTLA in Los Angeles on Sunset Boulevard, and as I'm driving down the street, there was a line that stretched for three blocks of every mime, juggler, and Venice Beach street entertainer waiting to go in and to audition for the Bozo Show. Al Hall, the producer, and Roy Brown, who played Cookie, were in L.A. auditioning actors. And it was a very hot summer day. And I remember seeing these people just puddles of white grease paint. And I was thinking, boy, am I glad I'm not in that line. And I went to my audition, and I went home, and the auditions for Bozo in L.A. came and went. Anyway, a couple of weeks later, my wife and I are having breakfast, and my wife had read an article in which Al Hall pretty much said he saw a lot of clowns, and he saw a lot of jugglers, and he saw a lot of mimes, but most of these people are physical acts and not actors. He says, I don't need a clown. I need somebody to play a clown who knows old-fashioned vaudeville and burlesque comedy, who isn't 80 years old. Now, I'd been working for Milt Larson at the Variety Arts Center, and that was pretty much what I'd been doing. We'd been doing a lot of old vaudeville and old-time burlesque comedy. And my wife looked at me, and she said, you know, they've done everything but put your name in this article. Mm. So I didn't know what else to do. I called Chicago, got a hold of Al Hall, and he said, well, if you've got something on videotape, send it to me. I said, okay. So I took the VCR tape of my appearance on The Tonight Show, and I sent that off to Chicago Federal Express. Now, the only tape I had of that appearance on The Tonight Show was a VCR tape, and it's not like the VCR tapes that you see today. In fact, those are almost extinct. These were things that was literally the size of a Gideon Bible. Remember how big those things
were? Oh, yeah.
Those big professional tapes. My goodness, they were big. And I sent that off, and 2 weeks go by, and I didn't hear anything. And I just assumed I didn't get it. So I said, you know, I got to call that guy. I want that tape back. I said, that's the only copy of that Tonight Show appearance I have. And I was just about to call. We had just dropped our son off to school. He was in like the first grade by that time. And I said, well, I'm going to call Chicago. And just then the phone rang, and it was Al Hawley. And he said, we're FedExing some material to you. We'd like you to fly to Chicago and audition. And that was pretty much it. I mean, that was on a Monday. The papers came on Tuesday, along with a plane ticket. I left for Chicago on a Friday, rehearsed and did the audition on a Saturday, and flew home Saturday night. And that was it. And that was just a whirlwind. I came to Chicago and met Fraser Thomas and Roy Brown, and we read through the scripts, and that's actually there's a story there. When I walked into the studio, the first thing Roy Brown said was, "I broke my leg in three places," and I said, "Don't go in those places." and he turned to Al and said, "So far, so good." Anyway, we read through the stuff. We walked through the comedy. And then Al said, we'd like to see you in makeup and costume to see how you look. So they put me in one of Bob Bell's old costumes. Bell was a good, oh my goodness, 7 or 8 inches taller than me. But they pinned it up. And they had a makeup artist there who put the clown makeup on me for the first time. And just as I'm getting the wig on, Roy Brown comes into the dressing room where I am, and he's in his full cookie costume, and he says, "Hey, we're in luck. This is going to be the biggest audience we've had for an audition yet." And he left. And I was stunned. And it was like, audience? Nobody said anything to me about there being an audience. And I was annoyed for a minute, and then I realized, heck, I'm in clown makeup. If I mess up, these people will never see me again. So I went out and I had a good time. And we got a lot of laughs. And as the audience left, we shook hands with everybody. And one 12-year-old kind of gives me this smirk and gives me a rather friendly punch in the shoulder and says, "Hey, you've done good. I hope you get the job."
Oh, that's funny.
Anyway, that was it. I then went back, had the makeup taken off, put on my clothes. Roy Brown comes running in saying, "Nice audition." He left. Fraser Thomas poked his head in. "Nice job, young man." He left. Al Hall came back in and he said, "Okay, that was it. Thanks so much. We're going to be looking these over. We'll probably let you know in a week." So that was it. I went back to California, and a week went by, 2 weeks went by, 3 weeks went by. I figured I didn't get it. Anyway, my wife and I are having breakfast again, sitting at the table when the phone rings, and it's Al Hall. And he says, "We'd like you to come back to Chicago." And I said, "Oh, is this a callback?" And he went, "Oh, no, we're going to offer you the job." Yeah. And that was it. That's how fast it happened.
You know, it's interesting. WGN, which is still on cable today, that's where this Bozo show aired. Bob Bell had been there, the previous Bozo, very popular gentlemen, mm-hmm. They saw Dr. Flamo, which prompted this audition. Obviously, you're not doing Dr. Flamo when you go out and do Bozo with Roy Brown.
I never did Dr. Flamo on the Bozo.
You're right. Right. But where did Bozo come from? I guess, at what point, once you got the material, and they liked mm-hmm. you as Dr. Flamo, we know what the costume looked like. You know, that was going to be what it was going to be. But where did Bozo come from?
Well, it basically came from the fact that, you know, the minute a friend of mine had cable, and he and his wife videotaped one of the Bozo shows, and I sat back and I watched Bob Bell and Roy Brown in action, and I realized, they need somebody to be Abbott to his Costello. They need somebody to be Hardy to his Laurel. So that was basically it. I realized that the main thing that they were casting for, more than anything else, was somebody who would have the same chemistry with Roy Brown that Bob Bell had. Somebody who knew to give Roy the right straight lines so that Roy could do the standard comedy lines that he did. And once I realized that, I just based the character on being the wise. Bozo being the white-faced clown was the boss clown. He was the guy in charge. He was the trickster. He was the one that always took advantage of his dopey pal, Cookie. And that was pretty much where it came from. When I first started doing the show, I based the voice on Milt Larson. But later on, it became more and more me. And my wife commented one day that there was a thin line between Bozo and me, and I have been slowly erasing that line.
It's a fascinating story because about this time, cable television is really kicking in. WGN, to WGN's credit and advantage, is a cable channel. The Cubs are national now. Your Bozo's national. Everybody's getting cable for a multitude of reasons. And it's not you're in Chicago, but boy, you're national at that point. What was that like?
Well, that was exciting. I mean, it was a very high profile show, and it was by that time I think there were maybe only two or three other Bozo shows still going on local channels elsewhere. I think there was one in Michigan. There was one I think down in Tennessee. It was either Tennessee or Alabama, which had also had a very long run. And eventually, we outlasted them all. We were the last Bozo show on American television.
Doing Bozo and being in Chicago at that time, Harry Carey's there. As I say, the Cubs are there. Jack Brickhouse is there. There's a lot of promotion going on. And just for fans who don't realize how big it was, when David Letterman, who was doing the show after Johnny Carson, the late night show on NBC, I believe this was in the early 90s, came to...
Letterman? Did you say Letterman?
Letterman, yes.
Because Letterman was on CBS.
Right, but I think you were on the NBC version of his show.
Well, basically.
Yeah.
Jay Leno got The Tonight Show, and Letterman went to CBS.
Right. So Letterman comes to Chicago, and his tour guide for a bit is Bozo.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Basically, they were looking for things that were uniquely Chicago to have fun with and lampoon, and that was pretty much it. So somebody suggested doing a segment with Bozo, and his writers came up with a whole bunch of stuff, and I literally spent the entire day with David Letterman.
It's fascinating because for people who don't understand Bozo in general, there's a whole long history there with Alan Livingston and Larry Harmon and a whole bunch of things that went on. People very protective of the character. Was there ever a thought... because basically, Letterman was in a way, you know, watch this guy, he said to the bus driver. I remember that from the skit when Bozo's...
Yes.
Was there ever any worry that, ooh, this might not be good for Bozo?
Well, no. Management was so excited to be getting the national publicity that they didn't care. We never got any complaints about it from the... Larry Harmon or any of his people. As long as Letterman was playing off of me and being snarky and sarcastic, as long as I wasn't being snarky and sarcastic and just maintained the character, I think that there was really nothing there that would have upset anyone.
I wonder about this, and I've never seen any proof. You obviously would know about this. Bozo was on 5 days a week, early in the morning, seven or eight in the morning. There was a ticket list that went years out to come to Chicago and sit in the audience. What kind of ratings was that show drawing when it was on in the morning, weekday?
Well, it was very interesting. TV Guide did a story about a family who got a Nielsen box that you know, pretty much tracked the kind of viewing that Americans were doing. And this family was so proud that they had a Nielsen box, and the father was convinced that, well, we're just going to put on PBS and intelligent, intellectual shows just to show America, you know, how clever we are. And he said the first day he had the TV on, while he's getting ready for work, all of his kids pile into the bedroom and turn on the Bozo Show. So it was like, well, there so much for my looking like an intellectual.
Wow.
And that was it.
It was a beautiful show. It was a really, when it was on 5 days a week, a really great comedy show, now that I look back on it, with Roy Brown as Cookie and Marshall Brodeen as Wizzo. And then it got a little more educational, let's say.
Yeah.
What happened?
Basically what happened is by the 90s, there was a lot more cable. There were a lot more options and for kids to watch TV in the morning, and there was the Disney Channel and Nickelodeon and so many other brand new flashy kind of things for kids to watch. Plus, by that time, they had taken us off 5 days a week and moved us to Sundays, and in order to meet their FCC obligations, they had to insist that we become more educational. The fellow who was the head of programming at WGN at the time had just come in from Los Angeles, where he had created the KTLA Morning Talking News Show. And it was the first of those happy talk morning news shows where the people sitting at the desk were doing more than just news, but they were doing funny things and telling jokes and doing all kinds of comedy in addition to the news. And I remember when they first started the WGN Morning News Show, they were taking props out of our prop cage and using them on the news show. Anyway, the general manager called me in and said, basically, if we're going to keep Bozo on the air, you're going to have to be more educational. And I nodded, and I said, okay, so basically then what you're doing is you're going to have a clown show that's a news show while you're doing a news show that's a clown show.
He didn't laugh.
If I'd gotten that reaction, I'd have felt a little more confident. But yeah.
Well,
but that was it.
Well, it's an interesting time as well, because two staples from the Bob Bell days, Marshall Brodeen and Roy Brown. Roy Brown, also about this time, becomes ill and can't do Cookie anymore, and Marshall Brodeen, for whatever reason, does not do Wizzo. He came back for the last show, I think, but he had stopped doing Wizzo.
Right.
Why? Well, we know Roy. Do you know why Marshall stopped when it became a more educational version?
Well, no, that wasn't so much. Marshall hated the makeup. He hated the putting on the spirit gum beard and mustache. It just drove him crazy.
He was now
so busy with his toy company. He produced a series of magic kits that he really didn't need to do it. And without Roy there anymore, Roy and Marshall had been very good friends for many years. And it just wasn't the same. So I think he just decided to retire.
When they left, you got some great new people in there. But yes. How did that change the show?
Oh, well, it was very interesting. First off, they definitely wanted to have a girl clown on the show. And they went with two. They went with Kathy Schickelberg and with Michelle Gregory. Who played Pepper and Tunia, and that was an interesting thing. But the dynamic had to change, because you couldn't do the kind of slapstick with a girl that you could with Roy. You know, I couldn't, you know, necessarily whack them with pies or dump water on them and things like that. Although that was traditional in professional clown situations, television was a bit more PC, and they were a little hesitant about the girls being roughed up. So we had to be very careful in the writing. And then we had to add another clown, which is when they brought in Robin Urich as Rusty, the handyman, because we needed that stooge, the fall guy, the fellow who always got hit with a pie, who always got water dumped on him, that kind of thing.
I think the interesting thing about the 80s and 90s, again, Chicago, Harry Carey, Michael Jordan, all these people were there. Do you have any interesting stories about being with these people, Harry Carey? Was there get-togethers with him, WGN parties?
Not really WGN parties. They had me up in the announcer's booth with Steve Stone and Harry Carey one day, and they were filming it. And Steve Stone was smoking one of his big cigars, which always drove Harry crazy, and trying to be amusing, Stone held up the cigar to me and said, "Care for a cigar, bozo?" And I smiled and said, "Well, you know, Steve, there's nothing like a good cigar." And that is nothing like a good cigar, which made Harry Carey just break up. He loved that because he loved anyone who would insult one of Steve's cigars.
What a great time. National television exposure. It wraps up in 2001. What was the last taping like, and were you ready for it to go?
Well, you know, it's funny. The last couple of years, I had started writing most of the material for the show. Andy Matran, who was our new one-man band, was producing a lot of great music and sound effects. We had stagehands that were really behind us 100%. Things were looking good. I think we probably could have gone a few more years. But the thing is, WGN had been slowly devaluing the show because they couldn't just cancel it right away. Putting us on Sundays, not giving us any promotion, not giving us any kind of budget, saddling us with educational material and less comedy, it pretty much signed the death knell of the show. And it was the end of an era. It was the end of the locally produced kids show. By the late 90s, there were so many stations, cable stations that were dedicated to just kids programming, that a local station didn't really need to do it anymore. A station like WGN could fulfill its FCC requirements by taking a show that was a science show or a nature show aimed at kids. And a lot of those shows were like, they were called barter shows. They would give the station that show for free, but they would be allowed to purchase advertising of their own. They'd be able to sell advertising on half of the show so that they could make their money, and that became a big thing.
When it ended, what was your plan? What did you want to do?
Well, I would have liked to have stayed in Chicago. My wife and I had many friends in Chicago, liked Chicago, but the truth of the matter is, I was Bozo the Clown. I couldn't get a job on a television news show because who would take an anchorman seriously who'd once been Bozo the Clown? There was not a lot of local television still being produced. It was just news and sports. The only entertainment show that is still going on in Chicago is Rich Coz and Sven Gulli.
Yeah,
I think that is the only entertainment. That is the only locally produced entertainment show. And because he's on MeTV, which has a national audience, he's able to make that work. So Rich Coz is the only really working comedian in local television.
You end up back out in L.A., and how have the preceding 18 years been?
Ups and downs. When I realized that I'd have to leave Chicago, and I figured that it would probably be a good time to maybe cash in on some of my notoriety and try to get myself started again out here, I looked up a lot of friends who worked in the voiceover industry, and I did some voices on cartoons. One fellow got me a job as a writer for a children's television show called Betsy's Kindergarten Adventures, and I wrote for that show. And that show had a tremendous cast. It had Tom Bosley and Fred Willard and Nancy Cartwright, just to name three. And I would write the show, and sometimes I would write in a character that they couldn't do a voice for, and I'd say, well, I can do that. And so they would put me in. And as a result, one day, an agent for some of this big talent was in there, and she saw me and said, oh, who are you with? I said, well, right now I'm between agents, and she signed me. So I've been with CESD in Los Angeles ever since, and that's been very useful.
What
I've done. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I've done some voices for video games and for shows like Tom and Jerry and the Mr. Men Yokai Watch, which is a Japanese anime show in which we had to dub over the original Japanese into English. So it's been very busy, and of course I keep busy doing theater. I've done some work in Anaheim with 3D Theatricals. I was in their production of Tarzan as Professor Potter, and I was Cogsworth in Beauty and the Beast. And I've done Plan B Entertainment, and I've done a number of shows in Alaska. In fact, I'm going to start rehearsals next month for Cabaret, in which I will be playing Herr Schultz, the little greengrocer.
Great.
That's nice.
Is there something you would still like to do you haven't done?
Oh, you know, there. I'd love to do a play in New York. I would love to do a show on Broadway, but I'm a realist. I'm just happy to still be a working actor.
Does the money matter? Is it the money or the work?
Wow, that's a tough one. Well, the work matters. Doing the work means a lot to me. The money means a lot too, because living in L.A. is not cheap.
Well, it's interesting because I've seen all these things as of late and talked to some actors, and they're well known actors, but they say the budgets aren't what they used to be. But if they like the material, they'll do it.
Sure.
Which I find interesting.
Yeah, well, you know, some of the people you've talked to are people who probably have a lot of money put away.
that helps. Well, let me ask you.
I've known a couple of young filmmakers who are college students who have managed to get some big names to do their projects for them because the performers had looked at the material and went, gee, this would be fun. I'll be glad to do it, and I'm between shows right now. Why not?
Not asking for a figure amount here, but since you spent a good majority of your career doing Bozo, being that it ended national, did that pay well? Was that a good job?
I was paid very well for a local television show. For an internationally broadcast program, probably not as much, but I can't complain. They were great years, and it was I made for a wonderful life for my wife and my son and I, and we had a wonderful time in Chicago.
You had a wonderful time. It gave people a lot of joy, all over the country. But as you say, hard to get work in Chicago after where you would have liked to have stayed because of Bozo. Mm-hmm. And there are other things we've talked about in other interviews regarding Larry Harmon and the Bozo character itself. So when you look back on Bozo, how do you describe it? Is it bittersweet? Is it great? Is it? How do you describe it?
Oh, I would describe it as wonderful. Something that came along when my family needed it the most, and the job itself turned into a tremendous amount of fun because I worked with so many wonderful people. Andy Matran, Robin Urich, Roy Brown, Marshall Brodeen. I got to meet people like Fraser Thomas and Ned Locke and Ray Rayner and Don Sandberg, who had been such a big part of the show. Being a character who was so beloved by a city was a tremendous responsibility that I took very seriously. And I enjoyed being a part of that tradition.
You know, for whatever it was or whatever it is, I can only tell you that when I told people you were going to be on the show today, and I've told you this before, when I ask you to come on, a lot of people do remember The Gong Show and The Tonight Show, and I'll get the YouTube clips and so on and so forth, but a lot of people, especially in the Midwest, because that's where we're located, say you were their babysitter, you were their friend, you were their... you were there, Bozo, and for whatever other Bozos were doing what they were doing, that's pretty special. That's a nice thing.
Well, thank you. That's nice to hear and nice to know.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, I'll ask, and you can or can't, can you do something in the Bozo voice for those people?
You know, the funny thing is, and as I mentioned before, my voice and Bozo's pretty much ended up sounding the same. I'll tell you one quick story. My wife and I were having dinner in a restaurant, and my wife said something funny, and I laughed. And the laugh was, you know, which was pretty much my Bozo laugh. And my wife said, "You're not going to believe this, but three kids just stood on their chairs and started looking around."
I love it.
But, no, the Bozo voice was right about here. And it was a lot more adenoidal than mine. And that was pretty much it. You know, of course, we had the standard, "Hey, that's me!" Which I did as a more of a yell, war cry than any yell.
And the grand prize game. Oh, my goodness. How could we ever forget that?
Yeah. I would drive the my producer crazy sometimes. We always had to start with the same thing, which was, "Are you all set for lots of fun and fabulous prizes?" And of course the audience would yell yes. And then I would have to go in with the same line, "Well, get ready because it's now time to play Bozo's grand prize." Well, one day, I don't know, I was feeling devilish and I went, "Are you all set for lots of fun and fabulous prizes?" And the audience went, "Yeah!" And I went, "Well, what about me? What about my needs?"
Oh, and, beautiful.
Oh, and Andy Matran literally fell down behind the electronophone. And my producer just stood there shooting daggers at me with his eyes.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, that made my day. That story is... I just picturing you in the clown suit doing that line. That's beautiful. That's a beautiful...
Well, there were a lot of silly things that happened on that show. And it was part and parcel of doing what was ostensibly an almost live television show.
Absolutely.
The only really live show we ever did was the 25th anniversary show that we did from the Medina Temple.
You know, I we have about a... Well, we're a little over, but we have a minute here. Because I want to bring that up, because I saw a clip of that the other day, and it's all the cast. Bob Bell came back, the whole bit, and you're singing, and Bob Bell is singing, and Be a Clown, and I thought, my goodness, why? I don't remember that when it was on, but what a tremendous production. What was that like?
That was incredible. And it was very funny because they wrote a wonderful comedy bit for Roy Brown and me to do. And we rehearsed it, we did it, and it was terrific. And then they came in and they said, "You know, we've got to tighten this up because we've got a lot of acts that we're putting on and we're doing a lot of stuff. Can you shorten it by about 2 minutes? And I kind of went, ooh, okay. And Roy said, sure, no problem. So we did it again. I said, that's really great. You took it down 2 minutes. Could you take it down 2 minutes more? And I said, no. And Roy said, sure, we can. And I went, what? And he said, sure, no problem. So we did it again. And it wasn't as funny. And they said, look, take one more minute off it and it'll be great. I said, you're taking 5 minutes off of a six-minute bit. You're giving us 1 minute? And I said, yeah. I said, no. I said, this is our big bit in the show. And Roy said, don't be so angry about this. We can do it in a minute. And so I then went back off the stage with Roy, and I just looked at him and I said, are you out of your mind? How can we do that bit in 1 minute? And Roy said, oh, we're not. He said, this is going to be live television. When the cameras are rolling, we'll do it just the way we want. It'll be up to them to make up the time.
You know, that's one thing.
Well, that's what I loved about working with Roy.
Well, I tell you, live television or live radio, you can have producers or whatever, but you're in charge. You know, you might have to answer for something later on, but when it's live, you're in charge in that moment.
Exactly.
Well, I you've always been kind to me over the years, and like I say, along with a lot of other people, you were the bozo that I remember. So every time I hear that voice, it is a happy memory, because I remember sending to be that at-home player. Remember, you wanted to be the at-home player. You wanted to win the stuff but didn't have to hit the buckets.
Yeah.
So it's been a lot of fun to have you on, and it always is, and hopefully we can do it again, and best of luck to you.
So it's always fun talking with you, Scott.
Thank you so much. Joey DiOrio, the guest today. Of course, you might remember him best as Bozo, but he's done a whole lot of other great things. For this day, this is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
It's running just beautifully. So if you have any computer information you need, you want to keep your computers running right, and you want to get the latest news and information, listen to Adam the Computer Guy. Every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 9:13, right here, 0.1 FM, W.